Thursday, August 29th. And today brought another exchange of bombings by the British and Germans. Berlin had its first real taste of death from the skies. There were casualties and some damage. And London had another of its nightly raids, this one lasting more than 7 hours. The bombing of the city and of England and Wales generally was the most ferocious thus far in the war. But now the news direct. London and Berlin, afterwards a report from Rome. First the news from the British capital, reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. When the all-clear finally sounded around dawn this morning, London had had its longest air raid of the war. It lasted for 7 hours and 6 minutes. Single planes were constantly touring over the capital. One would circle over the center of town, while another dropped explosives and firebombs in the suburbs. This morning, they tell us the damage was not very great, particularly to military objectives, because the planes were flying too high for accuracy. Among the places reported destroyed are one church and a Woolworth store. Hundreds of firebombs were dropped on towns and villages over southern England. It's impossible, of course, to get a very accurate check of the damage inflicted. In one southeast town, wardens had to put out 65 firebombs. From last night's raids, there are no reports of machine gunning. I think there were fewer tired and red eyes this morning in London than earlier this week. More people are sleeping through the raids, but still they are wearisome. The newspaper salesman outside St. Martin in the Fields scrawled out this greeting on his homemade poster. Good yawning, everybody. Some observers here believe these night raids over the Capitol are purely designed for their nuisance value. Others emphatically dissent. The latter don't believe the Germans would waste time and gas on any such objective as keeping people awake. These observers point out that this kind of raid is not new to England in this war. The same kind of long, drawn-out night flights occurred time and again over South Wales, for example, and prior to mass daylight attacks. If the comparison is correct, the German aims in these single flights over London are to bomb objectives, to make reconnaissance, and to train squadron leaders in night flights over strange ground. So far, the total of German planes reported destroyed yesterday still stands at 24, with a loss of half that many for the RAF. Considering the number of German planes which came over during the day, that figure is not big. It's asserted this morning, however, that this does not mean the RAF defense is weakened. They point out that air victories are not measured solely by the number of opponents shot out of the sky. Yesterday, we're told, many formations of German bombers which came over to attack airfields were broken up by fighters before the fields were reached. That in itself is regarded as victory. Among the fighter aces reported killed this morning is a Belgian, Lieutenant Philippard, who died in action off the southeast coast. He had brought down at least 5 Germans and probably 2 more. The British Secret Service and Scotland Yard have begun a citywide hunt for 5th colonists reported showing lights from London rooftops to guide enemy bombers. Scotland Yard has been flooded with telephone calls from flat dwellers who believe they spotted German agents. Most of these, of course, are cases of accidental lighting. The police are also out to stop rooftop parties. More than one supper party in London's West End adjourns to the rooftop, and flashlights and matches constitute a possible danger. Italians have admitted the British bombing of the Fiat works at Turin. A columnist who knows Italy well points out this morning that this admission is an invitation to continue bombing this point. The reason is that this factory has only been producing commercial motors and is being dismantled anyway. Vital Italian arms production has been transferred to Montcalieri, some miles from Turin, and is underground. On the other hand, the Caproni works at Milan and the Savoy factory at Sesto Calenda are important objectives and have been hit. This, we're informed, has really alarmed the fascists. On Monday, British housewives will be able to buy only 4 ounces of pure butter for the week, a cut of 2 ounces. They can still buy a combined butter-margarine total of 6 ounces. One little news item that had to come had just appeared in the press. The first shelter baby has been born in London. It's a boy born in an Anderson iron shelter during a night raid over the city. Mother and child are doing well. I return you to CBS New York.
That was Eric Severide reporting from London. Here is a press association dispatch from Athens. The Greek War Ministry says that 3 additional categories of specialists and reservists have been called to the colors. At the same time, 3 categories of trained artillery reserves have been released. Now the news reported direct from the German capital by William L. Shirer. Go ahead, Berlin. This is Columbia in New York, calling William L. Shara in Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin. This is Columbia, New York, calling William L. Shara in Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin. We regret, ladies and gentlemen, that we are unable this morning to contact our correspondent who was supposed to report from Berlin this morning. We've just been informed, however, that William L. Shara is now ready to report from Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
Important military objectives continually attacked. And most of the first page is given over to the report of German air attacks on Britain. On page 5 of the Bayezid, there is a one-paragraph account of last night's air raid alarm. It reads as follows, quote, "Last night, between 12:24 and 3:17 a.m., there was an air raid alarm in Berlin. Some British planes appeared at short intervals over the metropolitan district of the Greater Berlin and dropped incendiary and high-explosive bombs on residential districts and suburbs. Military objectives were not attacked," unquote. The paragraph continues, quote, "The damage done is insignificant. At several places in the center of the city, roof fires were caused, but were quickly extinguished by the ARP service. 10 persons were killed and 28 were wounded. None of the killed and injured had taken refuge in the air raid cellars." End of quote. Well, that's the official communique on the air raid we had here last night. About an hour after the raid, the propaganda ministry conducted the foreign correspondents around the city to observe the damage. In the Kotbusser Strasse, about 1,000 yards from the railroad station in the southeast part of Berlin, two 110-pound bombs had landed in the street, torn off the leg of an air raid warden standing at the entrance to his house, and killed 4 men and 2 women who, unwisely, were standing in the doorway. The propaganda ministry also conducted the journalists to the airfield at Tempelhof, the Klingenberg Electrical Works, and to the Siemens factory, which makes armaments, where nothing untoward was observed. Most of last night's activity appeared to be to the west and northwest of the city. According to a bulletin just issued here, German planes last night heavily bombed Liverpool, especially the docks there and at Birkenhead across the Mersey River. Other German bombs were thrown on Middlesbrough, Thameshaven, and Chatham. The conferences at Vienna between the German and Italian foreign ministers with the foreign ministers of Hungary and Romania over the future status of Transylvania began this morning. Herr von Ribbentrop and Count Ciano first conferred with Count Schacchi, the Hungarian foreign minister, and later in the morning they received Mr. Manolescu, the Romanian foreign minister. Probably this afternoon, there will be a combined meeting of the foreign ministers when the sort of agreement that Berlin and Rome thinks fair will be announced. 4 Turks, including a Turkish newspaper man, were arrested here today as reprisal for the arrest of a German bookstore owner in Istanbul. They were shackled and taken to police headquarters. The Germans charged that the German in Istanbul, who was arrested, was led shackled through the streets to jail. This is William L. Shire in Berlin, returning out of Columbia, New York.
And here's a dispatch from Cairo. A Royal Air Force communique reports that on Tuesday, British planes bombed shipping in the harbor of Derna, Libya, setting afire 2 ships. The British claim also to have raided Nokra Island in the Red Sea and to have attacked the Hara and Desi military headquarters in Ethiopia. Cecil Brown is now standing by in the Italian capital to give you the latest news from there. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. For the first time in the war, Italian bombers attacked the Suez Canal. The high command has just announced that fascist raiders dropped bombs on the British naval base at Alexandria, then went on to raid Suez. The war communique reports bombs were dropped on the northern entrance of the canal. Other bombs were directed against the ferry service at Alcantara. By means of this ferry, the railway crosses the canal from Egypt to Palestine. A bit of fighting took place in East Africa as well. The Italians say that bands of Dubats, native fascist troops, have occupied the British fort of Perignac. This fort is in the region of Lake Rudolf, which divides southwestern Ethiopia and Kenya. In Kenya itself, the Italian bombers raided the airports of Wajir and Garissa. Bitter fighting took place at the boundary between the Sudan and Italian Eritrea. According to the Italians, a British contingent supported by armored cars attempted a raid into Italian territory. The battle site was near the wells of Aberdeen. There, a group of native Oscaris, reinforced by native police troops, faced the British. Heavy fighting followed, and the communique says the British were repulsed. The British carried away numerous wounded on their armored cars. But the communique adds that about 10 Australians were found dead on the ground. The Italians say their losses were slight and report the capture of some machine guns and rifles. In the eastern Sudan, strong British patrols launched an attack against the Italian post of Garabat. The communique says the Italian troops holding the fort easily repulsed the British. Garabat is directly across the frontier from Ethiopia and was captured by the Italians early in July. The press here today believes that a solution will be found at Vienna to the differences between Romania and Hungary. Neutral circles here have the same impression. It's said the agreement probably will result in Romania giving up more than the four departments of Transylvania she has suggested, and Hungary accepting less than the 14 departments she has demanded. In other words, Count Charon Herr von Ribbentrop may effect a compromise so that a good portion of Transylvania goes to Hungary. As we see it here, King Carol is confident that the Axis will not allow a Balkan war. Knowing that, he can put up a shield of force that might induce the Axis powers to shave down the Hungarian demand. 24,000 fascist youth of pre-military age are on the march in Italy today. They are finishing up a period of training. These are boys of 18 and 19 years old, and soon they will be in the regular army. This present crop of boys was born into fascism, and they represent the last word in fascist training. When they go into the army, they go in as trained soldiers, ready for the front lines in a few weeks. At their age, many of us were Boy Scouts back home, taking hikes and working in nerve badges to become Eagle Scouts. These boys are different. They are expert on guns. Some of them are on the way to being pilots, machine gunners. Since the age of six, these boys have been carrying a gun, marching and training, learning discipline. Their watchword has been Libretto e Moschetto. In other words, book and rifle. They believe implicitly in Mussolini's other great order to the people. Believe, obey, fight. Since they were 6 years old, their bodies, minds, hearts, and spirits have been directed to the destiny they are about to serve. I've watched thousands of these boys marching, those of 6 and 7 years old and those of 18 and 19. Their discipline is perfect. I've talked with many of them, too. There's no mental confusion about them. They have been told the destiny of their country and the goodness of their cause, and they believe in it. 5 million boys between 6 and 20 wear a uniform and carry a rifle in this country. Those boys who are marching over the hills of Italy today, with 60 pounds on their back, husky, stocky, tan boys, are the new generation of Italian soldiers. They were born when Mussolini and his black shirt legions already had marched on Rome.
And with these news reports from Rome, reported by Cecil Brown, Columbia concludes another of these morning reports of European developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Eric Severide reported from London, William L. Shira reported from Berlin, and Cecil Brown from Rome. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.